Spoilers?
Check.
Mature language?
Check.
Should listeners be advised?
Check.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Marvel Super Heroes Podcast. I'm Illy the Machine. With me is...
Diablo Frank.
And...
Mr. Fix-It.
We're going to talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's the movie that came out a week ago.
Yeah, this should be interesting.
What do you guys want? How do we want to do this one? We do all these different, right?
Pretty much. I think we should keep this one free-flowing.
Okay, well...
Do we want to summarize the plot?
Yeah, let's summarize it. This one... Is it such me, or does this one kind of feel more like it picks up... It just seems like a direct Civil War descendant, right?
Yeah, I think that was the point of it.
Yeah, like it kind of feels weird that Infinity War happened before this movie. Because it really feels like this is right after, not right after.
It's 2 years,
But trying, you forgot all about Sokovia and Germany, the fight in Germany on the airport and all that jazz. By the time this rolls around,
they allude to it quite a bit in this one.
Allude to what?
Well, allude to like basically Civil War. They keep bringing it up.
They're not alluding to Civil War. All the ramifications in this film are because of all the shit he did in Civil War. Basically, the movie picks up with Scott Lang in house arrest. Right, he's got a protective ankle bracelet, so he's been there for what, 2 years, and he's coming up on the third year he gets out on probation. He can't have contact with Hope Van Dyne or Hank Pym or any of the Avengers
or Cap or anybody. Yeah,
right. Otherwise he goes to jail for like 20 years or whatever it is because he violates parole. So he gets regular checkups from this like crew of SHIELD or FBI. It's not SHIELD anymore, right? It's FBI agents who are checking up on him. So from there, Frank, you saw this more recently than anybody else. You might need to do some of this.
Well, it's funny because in the comics, Jimmy Woo was introduced, I think, as an FBI agent in the series The Yellow Claw. And then as the Marvel age began, he was swapped over into a SHIELD agent. And in this movie, he's back to being an FBI agent because there isn't any SHIELD in the MCU right now.
Oh, that's interesting.
Scott no longer has a relationship with Hank and Hope because he very publicly got busted in Germany over breaking the Sokovia Accords. So they're on the run because they supplied them the technology and they refused to come in on the Sokovia Accords themselves, or they'd already been implicated in his crime and therefore they were criminals. So regardless of whether or not they wanted to sign off on it, they were on the run. So they've been disappeared for a few years. The guys who used to be burglars working with him have a startup security company that they're all working at. Scott's having to try to work with them from home. He's obviously the genius behind the company, but because he's on house arrest, he's limited in what he can do. They're having to do all the actual physical work and angling for clients and the like. Well, we find out what Hank and Hope have been up to, if you guys want to pick it up from there.
Yeah, so
they've been on the run, haven't they? Just pretty much.
Right. But they've dedicated themselves to rescuing Janet Van Dyne from the Quantum Realm. So they think that she's got to be in there. Since Scott went to the Quantum Realm in Ant-Man 1 and returned, then... they're holding out hope that there's a possibility she's stuck in there too. So they're basically going through black market channels through. And who were they buying garbage from? What was the dude's name?
Walton Goggins, the guy who's a villain in every movie, it seems like, these days. Most recently, Tomb Raider. Probably best known for being on Justified and the Vice Shield. Principals. Oh, is he on the Shield too? Shield. Okay, I didn't know he was on the Shield.
He was. I think that was his start on the Shield.
But he's playing a dude, right?
Is he a comic book character?
I didn't recognize the name.
But Paquita leaned over and asked me if there's a comic book character. I'm like, hmm?
It doesn't matter.
Sonny Birch?
So anyway, they've been buying black market quantum tech through this dude in order to build like a craft that will go into the quantum realm that they can retrieve Janet Van Dyne with and bring her back up.
But like, can I just point out it bugs the hell out of me they keep talking about quantum stuff, since I associate that with anything but Ant-Man, either the quantum bands and Marvel Boy and Quasar, or over at DC, Captain Atom. It's weird to have the Ant-Man characters mixing it up in the quantum field.
You want
to
know what the bugs the fuck out of me? You just said bugs me out of me in a
unintentional pun.
Definitely fuck you and not Ant-Man and the Wasp, because what you just did was far more egregious.
So I just looked it up. Sonny Birch is some dude that came into Iron Man comics in the early 2000s and was killed off pretty quickly, so they just used the name, I guess, because he didn't look anything like Walton Goggins or anything, and he didn't last very long. So
yeah, I think there was some theory out there that he's working for Justin Hammer and that's where they're getting all this tech.
Somebody was
from.
Saying he was working for Hydra, and it's like they explicitly say in the movie there isn't a Hydra anymore. So I'm not saying that it's impossible, but it's like, it's a theory. It's like they say in the movie there isn't any Hydra, that he's working for other people, but okay, sure, it's a theory.
Yeah, whatever. Fucking gotta get those YouTube clicks, you fucking trolls. So from there, Scott Lang has a fever dream, right? where he basically, does he see Hope? What was the dream again? I mean, where he sees
Hope as a child. She's being chased.
That's
by
right.
And he's seeing through the eyes of Janet.
Yeah.
Right. Hide and seek. And we have a de-aged Michelle Pfeiffer, right? Which I thought looked pretty good. I think they've got this whole de-aging thing down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it helps a lot when you've got
standards now for that shit.
Well, that, and you've got so much. These are two actors that you have tons of reference for as what they look like in that time period. So I'm sure that helps a lot.
Yeah. At all ages, you've got video of these folks. He has a burner phone in his house. He breaks into his wall, pulls out a burner phone, and he's like, I have to. He's like, look, Hank, or did he call Hope? He was like, I just got to tell you, I had this weird dream about Janet and whatever. He goes, you know what? Don't worry about it. And he breaks the phone and throws it away. Well, that gets Hope to come basically kidnap him out of his house, right? And be like, look, you had that dream at the exact same time we opened up the portal for the first time. Yeah. So there's some connection. Like, you called within 5 minutes of us opening up the portal. So we don't think that was just a dream. We think because you've been in the quantum realm, she's somehow communicating through you. Very poltergeisty kind of bullshit, right?
Well, and there's a big thing too, where because they just now opened the portal, they've got a limited amount of time or they're going to lose the connection. So even though he's only got 72 hours, it'd be great if they could wait it out so he could be a free man. Time's of essence. We've got to get this done ASAP. So, yeah.
Right. So what they've done is they
it's only been 30 fucking years, but no, we got to hurry up and do it right now.
Right. So it's only been, well, chill out, dude. Chill out. That's commentary. That's commentary. Chill out. So they did they blew up an ant to be Scott Lang size, and they put his ankle bracelet on the ant, and they just programmed the ant to do all of his daily shit that he did, because he's a fucking idiot. Scott Lang's an idiot in these movies, so he just does the same shit all day. So they just program ant to do, like, you know, to take a bath at the same time, to go play drums on his shitty drum kit, and you know what I mean, do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yuck. So that's how they get him out of the house. So then she goes to, they ask him about what he did with the suit. He said, look, I got rid of the suit, and he was like, good, I'm glad you got rid of the suit. They're all obviously still very pissed off at him. But the fact that he did have the connection with Janet gives them like a little more like, okay, let's get Scott back in this, whatever, you know, we are kind of still a team, or we kind of are a team. So she goes to meet up with Slimeball dude to get the last piece for the quantum machine. And he's
Slimeball being like, Walton Goggins. Let's make sure to be clear.
Walton Goggins.
There's a lot of players in this movie, so we're probably going to have to emphasize, you know, who's where doing what.
So basically, she goes to get this final piece, drops off the cash, and he's like, look, I'm not giving you this piece. I know what you've been building this whole time. You know, I've been able to, I know what components you're assembling, and I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get into the quantum realm and mine quantum gold or whatever.
Well, he really overdid that accent. Yeah.
It's supposed to be an energy rush, like a gold rush and energy.
Like a gold rush. And he's like, I want in on it. And she's like, no. And he's like, yes. And then there's like a cool fight scene where she shrinks down and blows up. And then that leads to, at the very end of that fight scene, the ghost shows up.
Played by Hannah John Kamen, who is not somebody you probably know. She was in like a couple episodes of Game of Thrones and some other odds and sod shit, but nothing really major.
Okay. Nothing big. Yeah.
So doesn't she steals fucking Hank? So they can blow up and shrink his whole lab. So she stole the whole lab. Right.
Well, and she pulled a vision too, where she had her fist through Hank's throat to extort the lab. Yeah.
And they even call it phasing, right? Quantum phasing. Yeah. Like, which is weird, because like Vision doesn't even fucking quantum phase in these movies, and this bitch is doing it. It's freaking weird. So anyway, I didn't mean to call her bitch. Strike that. I don't know how she could be a very nice person. I have no idea.
She's the bad guy.
Yeah, she's bad in the movie. Yeah, she's a bitch in the movie. For the purposes of film only. So I don't know. This recap's taking too long. So what do you call it?
there's a whole bunch of shit going on. So basically, we've got the players on the board. We now know that there's everybody's chasing after. Everybody wants to get into the quantum field. Everybody's got their own little rationales. We might want to tell them why the ghost wants the lab.
Yeah, because she was working with Home Dude, who's Goliath. What's his name?
Lawrence Fishburne.
No.
The character is... Character. Okay.
What a coincidence.
Bill Foster. Bill Foster, the 1970s hero, Black Goliath.
Yeah. So they go to Bill Foster, because they're like, we need to track the building. How do we track the building? Fucking, I know. We can go talk to Bill Foster. He's an asshole. He doesn't like Hank Pym. Hank Pym, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. And then they decide to go team up. It turns out Bill Foster is behind the ghost. He's trying to fix her because she's got a quantum... She was in like a fucking experiment explosion.
Yeah, well, and this may be important is that we have a history of Hank Pym being a douchebag and never working well with other people. One of the people that he was working with, he said, was stealing his plans or was in some way a traitor. And so he got him drummed out of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it ruined his name, basically. And so he goes to Argentina. He sets up a lab to continue pursuing quantum research. He's got a wife and kid at this point. Things go wrong. He and his wife get killed and his daughter gets out of phase disagrees with our realm of existence, our plane of existence, and so she's constantly having to fight to remain a physical presence on our Earth, but also because she's torn between dimensions, she's constantly in pain from her essence being split in all these different realms.
Her father's egghead, by the way.
I was going to say.
Is that a case? I didn't know. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, asshole, cool, quotation
gotcha.
Marks.
Gotcha. And he was bald, so that's why, I guess that's why he's egghead. I don't know. They just gave him the same name. Anyway, so yeah, he's devoted his life to help fix her, right? So,
or rather, we should put Lawrence Fishburne has, but we don't know that yet. It's a reveal.
Right. So, you're well, yeah, I know, but we're fucking.
I know. That's how everybody's connected. Is you basically have these two father-daughter teams that are at war with each other. One wants to save their mom, the other wants to save the kid. So everybody's got a skin in this game.
So we want to just wrap it up and how it ends, because then there's just a bunch of, it's just chasing around the building and like trying to get into the quantum realm after that, right?
The whole movie, everybody's chasing everybody else, trying to get the lab and the MacGuffin of the quantum channel thingy, whatever the fuck the shit is.
Right. Because I keep calling him slime ball, dude. What was his name?
Goggins. I don't care what his fucking name was. It's Walton Goggins. Fuck it.
Goggins. Well, I don't even fucking know that name. I don't know that name either. No fucking Goggins. Goggins is?
Sonny Birch.
It's a Goggins. Goggins. Goggins is going after Hank Pym's building. Hank Pym's going after Hank Pym's building. The ghost's going after Hank Pym's building. And because Goggins can't get the building, he notifies the FBI. So the FBI is going after Scott Lang and Hank Pym and Hope Van Dyne. So they're all sort of going out. And it's the baton race where, you know, the ghost gets the building and then Goggins is going after the building and then Goggins gets the building and then Scott Lang gets the building. You know, it just kind of goes on.
Yeah.
And then fucking what's his name? Michael Pena shows up and we'll talk every now and then he goes away. And then we get to the very end where they get everything set up. They go to like an obscure location. Hank Pym goes into the quantum realm to get Hope. He gets Hope just in time and they save her and she's able to cure the ghost of her ails. Ta-da. See, I did it. That was it, right?
Pretty close enough.
Okay. Hey, what do you guys think of this movie? You go first, Mr. Fix It.
Mentioned it before that the first Ant-Man was one of my favorite Marvel movies.
We rewatched it before we went and saw this. The movie's fucking great. Dude, that movie is so good. It is super underrated. How tight and funny and just like it's so good, dude. I remember liking it. We watched it again. And I was like, this is even better than I remembered it was.
Trust me. Me and Frank got in a big argument about it because he's like, I didn't realize this was your favorite movie.
We were talking. I had talked some shit about Ant-Man. We were talking about how bad the Marvel movies were on the back end, specific to the Hulk movies. And you got pissed at me because you're like, you thought that I specifically targeted shit-talking Ant-Man because you'd said that was one of your favorite movies, and it was like, A, I had no recollection of you ever saying that was one of your favorite Marvel movies. Well, you're not an Ant-Man fan in the comics.
We had discussed it in private,
but I didn't remember.
I thought this was a shot back because of the Wonder Woman shit. So
and I love, too, how you were like, and it's not like I ever go after Wonder Woman. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, every podcast we've done for a fucking year, you've gone after Wonder Woman. I go after Ant-Man once, and you're like, ooh. You're clutching your fucking pearls, you asshole.
Like, no. No, you kept going like, we're not going to see Wonder Woman together.
We're not seeing Wonder Woman together. I'm not absolutely not seeing it with either of you guys. Sorry. No.
Mr. Fix and I are fucking crashing that theater, dude.
Dude, I told you. We're going to crash that theater. It's going to be like, what I tell you, De Niro from Cape Fear.
Yeah.
We'll be sitting in the front of the theater laughing and smoking a cigar.
So you're going to recreate the experience we had trying to watch it the first time.
He's going to get feminism y'all tattooed on his knuckles.
Get soused at the fucking bar before seeing the movie and bring your kids too.
But as far as this one, I was kind of disappointed. I was shocked. Me and Frank talked a little bit about this, but this movie was a reminder of how a writer and director, how well they're at their craft. This movie lacked Edgar Wright from jump. Like, if you watch the first one, I think a lot of the enjoyable parts are Edgar Wright influenced, where this movie was like, let's write a sequel to this movie and that's it. And like, we're not going to, I thought, like, you know, growing the ants to take his place, I thought that was stupid. Like, there was a lot of things they did in this one. I was like, whoever wrote this just wrote this to get a check. Like, they didn't think about it. They didn't care. They didn't love the character. It was just like, hey, they already got a franchise started. I'm just going to roll off of that. Because, like, you know, in a moment I've discussed where literally there is a part of the movie that took me out of the movie completely. I was so fucking pissed off when that scene happened. I was just fucking infuriated.
Fucking talk about it. Talk about it. We already did.
Okay. Well, okay. So when they save Michelle Pfeiffer's character and she's, you know, that was kind of goofy up to that point, you know, I enjoyed the movie, but it's like Michael Pena's doing the same kind of jokes. You know, they're kind of rehashing the same jokes. There's nothing really new except for the giant ants. I wasn't a bit, you know, I like the ghost from the comics. He's one of Tony Stark's villains, right? Where he's always after anyone who's tech related.
Yeah, he's more like a he's like a techno taskmaster.
Terrorist. Almost. Well, I mean, you guys, I thought he was like a terrorist.
It kind of is.
Hold on, you guys did an episode of all the Ghost. Remember a few years back, you two decided to go off and do your own episode featuring Iron Man and Ghost fighting each other.
That's Joe Fixit and Iron Man fighting.
No, that was Ghost. You and me. You and me did that.
No, well, both. It was Joe Fixit, the character, and Iron Man teamed up. That's why you were doing this story about the Ghost.
No. You and I did the Ghost.
You and me did the Ghost? No, I didn't do it.
Yeah. Yes. Remember? Yeah.
Okay.
He kills Spy Master by freezing him in the wall. That was you and me.
Okay. I thought that was, okay. My bad.
Oh, wow, Frank. You just got Frank. Anyway.
You just got reverse Franked. You got quantum Frank.
Well, I think that's one of the only episodes. I don't think I edited that episode. I think that was one of the few episodes I didn't edit. And if I didn't edit it, I don't remember it as well because I didn't spend hours working on it. So
you just threw it out there. Throw it out there in the ethos.
No, I think Mac edited that one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I did that one.
Oh. Well, anyway, it felt like a rehashing of the first one, just not as good. And the scene that I told Frank, there's always, for me, there's certain scenes that can literally yank me out of a movie, like completely just shut down the movie for me. It doesn't happen often, but every once in a while it does. And the scene where Michelle Pfeiffer comes back and Ghost is in front of her and she does the fucking ET touch to cure her, my seat was like, what the fuck?
Wasn't it?
I was fucking infuriated. Up to that point, I was already like the quantum where they're walking around without masks and shit. And it's like, it's okay. Like, you know, I was just kind of like, okay, I'll let that go. I'm going to let that go that, you know, they're playing a little bit with it. You know, she's walking around without a mask. She hasn't aged. She doesn't eat. And apparently she's been transformed by the energy. I'm like, okay, that sounds a little goofy, but okay, I'm going to let it slide. But dude, when she did the ET touch, that was it. I was so fucking pissed after that. I just wanted the movie to end. Thank God it happened at the end of the movie, though. And so that's really what took me out of it. And that really, it kind of ruined the movie for me, that scene.
What about you, Didablo Frank?
Well, I want you to tell the folks what you thought I was going to, how you thought I was going to react. You were telling Fixit how you thought I was going to react.
Oh, yeah, he and I were talking, and I was like, you're either going to fucking hate it, or you're going to go way over the top and talk about how much you loved it. I don't know which way you're going to go. I assume you're going to hate it, because I don't know. I mean, look, you hated the first one. I don't know why you'd like this one.
Hate's a strong word. I just didn't like the first one. I do think the first one is among the worst of them. No, I did. I did. I borrowed Joe Fixit's copy. Me and Paquita watched it. I watched it in installments, which right off the bat tells you the trouble, because the really good Marvel movies, you may plan on watching 10, 20 minutes of them while you're eating, but before you know it, you've ended up getting sucked into half the movie, if not the whole movie, because they're just so engrossing. Where the Ant-Man, I had no troubles. Like, okay, we're done eating our pizza. Stop. Pick it up tomorrow. I didn't hate Ant-Man and the Wasp. Me and Paquita were talking about it. Neither one of us liked it. And we were debating whether or not it was one of the worst of the Marvel movies. It's definitely one of the worst Marvel movies, but we were arguing which ones. I think it's worse than Iron Man 3. Paquita disagrees. We definitely think that Incredible Hulk was better. She argues that The Dark World was better than that. I think that probably The Dark World's still worse, because the worst crime of Ant-Man and the Wasp is just super fucking boring. And I think it's 2 hours long, and it felt like it was longer. I just spread out all across my seats. It was just kind of like lying as though I was on the couch, because I was just waiting for the fucker to end. But it's not terrible. It doesn't make me mad. There's nothing in the movie that makes me angry. It's just boring and shitty, and I don't want to see any more of these movies.
You're not vested as much in it. For me, I'm vested in it, and it angered me that they would do something that stupid. Like, that to me was very
It was extremely dumb.
Writing.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Lazy writing.
Yeah, to me, that's very... It was something that, since you pointed that out, a lot of stuff in this movie was just not characteristic of the Marvel Universe movies.
Yeah.
Like, they don't cop out a whole fucking dumb movie. Like, I don't know. I guess I'm going to jump around in my review now, too. Like, I don't understand why the Ghost was even in this movie. Do you guys?
No.
What was she even in the movie?
Nice visual. They needed a villain. Definitely, yeah, that's it, right? Definitely because... very much the stereotypical weak Marvel villain, because she's just there to motivate shit.
But really, but you already had the FBI, and you had fucking Goggins coming after him. Like, you didn't even need the Ghost to be the person coming in and stealing the tech and going back and forth.
I think you did, because those were not particularly strong menaces. At least the Ghost, for a while before they start beating her routinely, seemed like a very imposing threat. And you also need to sell an action figure, and nobody's buying the Walton Goggins action figure. Plus, Goggins in this movie has a very strong Justin Hammer vibe too, and I think that they should have been aware they were in the wrong place if they were going there, because this movie feels very much like the complaints against Iron Iron Man 2 about there being so many characters, so much going on, so fucking busy that you don't invest in any of it. But included is here's a flashy villain to at least keep your attention. Whereas if it had been the FBI and Goggins, I think it would have been a complete washout.
No, I'm just saying, but the Ghost didn't do anything more than what those guys did. She just creatively took the building and went somewhere with it. She, you know what I mean? She didn't actually fucking do anything. But then when you find out, oh my God, she's got this ailment, maybe they're going to cure the ailment. And then at the very end of the movie, Michelle Pfeiffer just comes out and touches her on the fucking head and then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that was it? That's why she was in the movie? For us to give some, to show the Wasp, to show that Janet Van Dyne has quantum powers? That really ended up being the only reason she was in the film, was to demonstrate her quantum powers at the end by touching her and curing her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? That's why she was in the fucking whole movie? Like, that's it? And I think you said it, Mr. Fix It, about how this is like a sequel. This is like,
it's like sequel on top of sequel. It's like, if there's not a movie here, it's just it's a sequel to like two other movies without being a movie on its own.
But it's the most feels like a sequel. Like, this is exactly, it's got all the tropes that people make fun of sequels for having. You cram too many fucking characters. You rehash a lot of stuff from the first movie, but you don't do it the right way. You don't do anything that breaks the mold that you set in the first movie. It's like, holy shit, like every single stereotypical thing you can do in a sequel, they did in this movie. Like, the cast is fucking huge, dude. I'm like, how the hell is the supporting cast for Ant-Man 15 characters long? There are so many. You got Cassie, his daughter. You got the estranged wife. You got
Not so estranged. They actually all get along marvelously well.
Right. Okay, so the ex-wife.
So they're not even there to create conflict. They're just there to talk to the FBI agents, you know?
But they're members of the cast. They're involved. They're getting calls asking, where's Scott at? So you got the daughter. You got the ex-wife. You got the ex-wife's new husband. You've got Michael Pena and the two ex-con guys.
Yeah, I was so sorry. Because I didn't like those guys in the first movie. It's like, oh, God, they're back for more? Fuck these guys.
And then now you've got Janet Van Dyne, Hope Van Dyne, Hank Pym, Scott Lang himself, and then you got the fucking kooky FBI agents. So they're treating all these characters like they're legitimate mainstays in this franchise. I just named 10 characters, dude. Like, that is outrageous to me that in a movie, in one film, that this snowball picked up this many characters. Like, I don't know. I just like was calculating in my head and I was like, damn, I got this character and this, because like the new father, his ex-wife's husband,
Bobby Cannavale,
he's a legit character.
Yeah.
Like, he was established in the first movie. He shows up in this movie. They've got the rapport where he really wants Scott to keep his nose clean. And, you know, I mean, like, he's an active member of the cast. You know what I mean? It's just so weird to me that as tiny of a little franchise as Ant-Man is, no pun intended, that they got fucking 1,000 characters. And then on top of it, you had 4 villains in this movie or whatever the hell it was. And I'm just like, it was just like bursting at the seams and nothing happened. Like, nothing happened in this movie.
No, I really, honestly, I thought there was going to be a scene where Goliath and Ant-Man were going to fight and Ant-Man got bigger than Goliath, like something
cool. Or that we'd ever get to see Giant Man. I mean, Black Goliath at some point, since they set up that he'd been doing that in the past, and you're kind of hoping to see Lawrence Fishburne be a superhero.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, they're going to do something cool like that. Because I was like, because so far it's been garbage. Like, up to that point, I'm like, I was really, like I said, the story was just so disappointing that they did nothing with it.
Well, there isn't a story. Shit just keeps happening. It's just a bunch of occurrences.
It was a filler issue.
It's a bunch of circumstances, yeah.
And that was so fucking infuriating. I mean,
I thought the special effects were good, but like, I felt like they did a lot of really original stuff in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, of him like training underground, and every time he would freak out, he would burst through the ground, or they would have the ants spell out messages, and or they would crawl down and cover up security cameras. And all they did was they just redid all that shit in this movie. They didn't they did nothing different, except now that he can grow. Like, I thought when he was using the pallet truck as like a scooter, I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. But that was like that was it. He just did that the whole time. I thought when he like midway grew, where he was like middle schooler height or whatever.
Oh, I hated that sequence because you could tell they thought it was really funny, and it was just like,
No, it didn't work.
But it felt forced. Like that, that scene felt really forced.
Where he's running around with a sweatshirt, and I'm like, this isn't really that funny. In fact, it's kind of like off putting. You know what I mean? I don't know. There's something kind of off putting about the. I saw an interview with Rudd today, and he said that it took forever to shoot that scene. Forever, because they had to shoot it from tons of different angles, and I was like, wow, they sure tried really, really hard for that scene that just did not seem that complicated and was entirely forgettable. I mean, but apparently they freaking torture those actors for that scene, and I'm like, okay, whatever you say. What else? But honestly, one of my biggest issues with this movie, and it was something that I didn't read really a lot of reviews or spoilers on this movie. I just had seen generally that people seemed to like it and that it was entertaining and kind of fun. I didn't see one review where it was like, man, a lot of techno babble in this movie. And I was like, yeah, whatever. There's techno babble in all these movies. Holy shit. This movie has so much bullshit techno talk in it that I swear to God, half the fucking script. They even kind of joke about it at one point where they're like, why do you just keep putting quantum in front of everything? Ha ha ha. Except they were actually doing that and trying to bullshit it as like real science.
Yeah.
Which is, again, kind of another not Marvel Universe thing. Like, they don't half-ass this shit so much. You know, like, even in Iron Man movies where he's building armors, I didn't feel like he talked bullshit like this. And this movie was just bullshit on bullshit. Like, when they go and they talk to Goliath, what's his fucking name again?
Bill Foster.
Bill Foster. And Bill Foster's like, they're like, we're trying to figure out a way to track the building. And he was like, well, use the resistor in your suit. And he was like, well, I took the resistor out of the suit. Well, just change the frequency on the resistor. Change the frequency on the resistor. And then they talk to him later on. He's like, well, I took the resistors out of the suit in the Mark II change, whenever. And I'm just like, this is fucking nothing, dude. You're saying nothing. And someone sat down and wrote this and was like, oh, well, this would make sense. The resistor. Let's just track the new resistor. And then later on, the whole bullshit, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, Frank, about how they had to get to her in 36 hours. Otherwise, there's a quantum shift and she could be lost for another 1,000 years. And it's like, what? Like, this is, yeah, this is nothingness. You're literally telling me nothing.
It's just gibberish.
It's fucking gibberish, dude. And it fucking pisses me off, because if you're not making it such a big part of the movie that you've got to sneak Scott out of the house because we've only got 72 hours and we got to get this part, and they keep stealing it because if we don't, we're going to lose hope for, we're going to lose Janet Van Dyne forever. Why? Because there's going to be a quantum shift and we're going to, what? Fuck off. And then it gets even worse later on where they're trying to get her, and then Michelle or Janet ghosts into Scott's body to come talk to them.
Oh God. Yeah. The part where she's in his body and he's, oh my God, that was terrible.
You need help with, what was it? The algorithm. Your algorithm's wrong. And now we just need to type this new algorithm. And I'm like, this is all bullshit. And it's not, you didn't just do it for one scene to bullshit out like to no prize your fucking ending. It's been this the entire movie, and I'm tired. I'm tired of the word fucking quantum. I'm tired of the quantum science. I'm tired that Janet Van Dyne has quantum powers. And I don't try and bullshit me because you made a little joke that you're just sticking the word quantum and everything to, it almost makes me feel like they watched the movie. They watched the movie and went back and like, we got to put in a joke about this. So maybe it'll kind of let people forget the fact that we just fucking shat out an entire problem to solve. Like, it was too much for me. And dude, I can take plenty of this stuff. I watch enough sci-fi. That's fine. Dude, I know all about fucking warp torpedoes and fucking phasing and bullshit like that. Bring that shit on. I got no fucking problems with that shit. I got no problem with fucking cloaks. Cloak it. I don't give a shit. Cloak it. Phantom cloak it. Fucking cloak warp it. I don't give a shit. This movie went way too far for it for no fucking good reason. And it was to the point where, like, where she does the ET touch and I was just like, fine. She's a fucking celestial now. Like, whatever, dude. Whatever fucking is, dude. But I'm gonna tell you this right now, okay? I'm telling you this right now, because the more I've thought about it, because I left the movie like you, Frank. I don't hate the movie. I don't ever want to see it again.
Yeah.
I was more mad that the first one was so good and this one was so shitty. And honestly, this one made me, this, if you told me, if you put Ant-Man 1 and Ant-Man 2 and you showed them both to me and you said one of these movies was written by like three people because they fired the first guy because he didn't have the right vision and the studio came in and rewrote everything, I would have said that was Ant-Man 2.
Yeah.
Ant-Man 2 feels like a bunch of fucking people who got together.
There is a bunch of people that wrote Ant-Man 2. There's like six guys who wrote this thing.
Was it really? Ant-Man 1, though, is the one where you lost your director three times and everything. Like, I would have thought that was Ant-Man 2. Like, no, you had the same guy wrote Ant-Man 2? Really? Or who directed Ant-Man 2 and produced? It wasn't, there was no turmoil. Like, there was Ant-Man 1 where they lost, what's his name and everything?
Who
was
Edgar Wright.
Edgar Wright and all that stuff. To me, Ant-Man 2 feels like the movie that lost its director and they had to fucking scrounge around for someone.
And spin their wheels to spin it, fill up the screen time because they didn't know what to do. Yeah.
Right, exactly. That's what Ant-Man 2 felt like, when really that ended up being Ant-Man 1, and Ant-Man 1 somehow works. I don't understand why it's so good.
I think it works so because they probably followed Edgar Wright's script pretty fucking faithfully.
I think so too.
Go off script, the whole thing with the Falcon, you could tell, oh, they just plugged that in there. That's not something he wanted to do, and so that's an obvious thing. Rewatching that sequence, I liked it better than I did in theatrical, but you can tell where something kind of got jammed into the first Ant-Man is like, this doesn't feel like it's of a piece with the rest of it. But the movie in overall is fairly consistent. It's got, it's hits the, all of its beats. So you can tell that at the end of the day, somebody just went, let's just shoot as much of the script that they, that Wright labored over for 8 years as possible. And that worked out. And with this, I think it's one of those things like, do you remember in Living Color where they had the bit where the two inmates would be talking to each other and they'd obviously been like in the prison library trying to learn words and they're trying to say these really big words about squeezing titties and shit, essentially, to make themselves seem smarter? Loquacious.
We must internalize the flatulation of the matter by transmitting the effervescence of the Indonesian proximity.
This is what this movie feels like. It feels like Edgar Wright's a genuinely smart guy and was able to do a reasonably smart story in the first Ant-Man, and these guys don't know what to do without him, so they just keep plugging in all these fucking words to make them seem like they're smarter than they actually are, because it's, this movie's fucking dumb and it's fucking boring.
It's really dumb. This movie's extremely really dumb.
Yeah. Sitting in the can reading the latest Image magazine, you know, they put out their own little magazine that has interviews with the creators, and two creators in the same magazine did a play on You Have to Kill Your Darlings, right? And this is a movie where you clearly that did not happen. They could not kill anybody. Everybody was a fucking darling. It's bulked up with just so much that you don't need, that needed to be trimmed, that needed some editing, that needed some clarity. They don't, they're not willing to cut anything, so they put everything out there and it's ending up being nothing, because nothing has time to actually dig down and become something. Nothing can grow out of the soil. It's just barren because it's just this flat thing that just sits there.
Because you ask people what people liked about Ant-Man 1, they're like, oh, they loved Michael Pena. I thought Michael Pena was great in Ant-Man 1. Mm-hmm. The way he would do the little recaps, like, yo, bro, my cousin, he told so.
That's one of Bukita's favorite parts when we were watching again. She totally got into it. And this one, they do it like three times and doesn't work any of the times, really.
It doesn't work. But they were like, well, we like Michael Pena and the Stooges in the first one. We got to bring them back. Well, we liked, you know, Janet or Hope and Hank. They got to come back. So they're back. Like, you're right. They can't get rid of anybody, because I guess, I don't know if they're too afraid they're going to get rid of something somebody liked from the first film. But instead, it just ended up fucking up everything. Like, Michael Pena stressed me out in this movie, dude. Where he was like, actually, like, man, I gotta make this pitch. You know, we're gonna lose this company. I'm like, this isn't funny. What the fuck?
Yeah.
So why have any of this?
And the thing too, the company too. It's like you could tell, like, maybe they were afraid that this is a movie that had a whole bunch of minority characters in it in the first movie, and they're crooks. So they're like, okay, we're gonna fix it. We're gonna make them security specialists now. And it's like, that doesn't make any sense. These guys were like living this hardscrabble existence. Things would only get worse with Scott Lang being on house arrest and shit. And yet somehow they managed to pull together this business and shit. And we're supposed to be engaged in this, the travails of their startup and shit. I don't give a fuck.
But it would have been fine if that was the plot. It would have been fine if that was the plot.
If it wasn't just one more thing instead of one of a billion different things they tried to do in this movie. Yeah,
exactly. If this movie would have been about him trying to get he and his buddies trying to get the company off the ground, and his fucking priors are fucking everything up, and now all these dudes who know he's a superhero are trying to fuck with their company, that's one way you could have gone with it.
Yeah,
but they didn't go that way. Mm-hmm. Or you should have just forgot about them entirely and done the Hope, Janet, Pym deal, and it could have gone that way.
Yeah, focus on turning like Fantastic Voyage from back in the 60s. That's the story of them trying to traverse the microverse. You don't have to have a villain. You just have everybody go into the microverse and trying to find Mom. And that's a movie right there. Exactly. But instead, it's just a fucking subplot, and a terrible one too. It's really badly done.
So yeah, man, dude, Journey to the fucking Quantum Realm would have been a great movie, or not great movie. It would have been a much more focused movie. Right.
And speaking of the Quantum Realm too, they recycled visuals from the first movie, and they weren't that strong in the first place. I always thought it was kind of a lame sequence, because you think it's supposed to be mind-bending, and then you go watch Doctor Strange, like, oh shit, that's what this was supposed to be, but they didn't have the director they needed to make that happen, and so they go back there again. It's like, so we're looking at amoebas. Okay. Woo! So exciting.
I mean, I don't know. We're going to just talk about the same shit over and over again. But
oh no, I have a whole bunch of different ways of attacking this movie.
Okay, cool.
I have a bunch of angles on this one.
You bastard.
But here, and you guys may disagree, but this is one real fucking shame for me is, and you guys know I was off the Paul Rudd train before this even started. I like Paul Rudd's Scott Lang. I thought he worked really well in Civil War. I think he bounces off these guys as being the freaking idiot ex-con cat burglar really well. I like Evangeline Lilly's Hope. I love Michael Douglas's Hank, fucking curmudgeon-y old Hank Pym, which when Hank Pym gets older, I would expect he would be exactly like that. Just fucking mad at everybody. Yeah. Pissed at anybody who fucked with his experiments, et cetera, et cetera. I like Michael Pena. I don't mind the minority con guys either. I think when they're doing their thing, they're funny.
Well, here's the problem though. This is one of the most diverse movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and they added on to that with Jimmy Woo, played by Randall Park from Fresh Off the Boat, right?
Who I thought was funny.
And it was cute. It was cute. But the fact is, all these guys are imbeciles, and so your diverse movie is a bunch of imbeciles. And then you take the case of Jimmy Woo. That character was created in the early 1950s. He was part of that period between the Timely and Marvel ages. He was created as a super competent Asian FBI agent that's chasing after a Fu Manchu type that became a classic Nick Fury villain in the 1960s. They reduced him into basically a replacement for Bobby Cannavale. Bobby Cannavale was the bumbling inspector trying to catch our hero in the first movie, and so they just recycled that dynamic with Jimmy Woo. And Jimmy Woo in the modern comics, he is part of the Agents of Atlas. He's the head of his own super team. He's like the super competent Asian dude, so he probably should have been like a John Cho or something, and instead he's just more incompetence comedy fodder. So
yeah, he's there for laughs.
Yeah, why are you here? Why are you messing up a character? It's another one he steals where let's take a name from the comics and just fucking ruin it for a bullshit throwaway character. For the most part, he could have been just the FBI guy without having it tied to the comics and ruining a very rare heroic Asian non-stereotype character from the comics.
Well, I never heard it existed, so I don't know.
Yeah, he was in the Jim Steranko run of Nick Fury. Yeah,
that's
man.
Fine.
Well,
that's
so
fine.
What bothered me was you could tell by the story that whoever wrote this or the group that wrote this, I don't think they understood the Ant-Man world, the universe. They wrote a sequel to a movie that they liked, and that was it. They didn't, and I don't feel there was really any research done or any. Is there any stories or other villains we could use? Or there, I can think of so many. I mean, the.
Well, you like the ghost Christmas from Thunderbolts, right? Is he like this cool, creepy, agoraphobic character and shit?
I like that one, yeah, where he never takes off his suit because he's paranoid that people are going to poison him. He actually builds like a panic room with no doors, so he has to phase in and out. He never bathes because he's a conspiracy theorist to the highest degree, where he doesn't even take a bath because he's afraid there's stuff in the water, so they're always complaining that he stinks. I thought that was kind of a cool ghost character. Like, that's, you know, all these little idiocracies added to a character. They could have even done the Kirkman where, you know, he's just being chased down by, you know, an agent that he wronged and hurt, and you know, I don't know, this was just so lazy. Well, the writing was so lazy.
Yeah,
so,
well, it's like you're talking about this character, it sounds like a really cool, interesting, unique villainous presence, and obviously he has a cool visual which they borrowed heavily from for this character, but then make a point of taking off her mask halfway the movie so she's just a hot chick.
Yeah,
so
I didn't get that either the whole time, where it's like, why is she running around without her mask? Like, that I thought that was the cool part about her. It's like, you know, she needs
she's creepy
mask to survive
and,
or some
yeah.
shit.
Yeah, it's what's holding her in place, basically.
Yeah, and it's, she wore it in the beginning and a little bit in the end when she's jumping phasing. Like I said, whoever wrote this, it was just lazy, and I'm just really disappointed by that.
Hey, she's terrible, by the way.
As the
I don't know. I think I there wasn't anything
stiff.
On the page for her. There,
real dude,
what,
super.
But she was whatever they needed her to be. Is she supposed to be a sympathetic character who's in terrible pain and she's been compromised by all the agony that
she's
experiencing? Or is she just a full on assassin, sick. Evil chick?
Yeah,
or is she the little girl lost?
I was supposed to feel for her or not? I was really confused. Like, am I supposed to be sympathetic because she's suffering? But wait a minute, she killed people. She killed people for SHIELD/Hydra. And I was kind of like, so you know, you can't really.
I think one of the writers wanted to be one thing, another writer wanted to be another thing, and so we just end up with this hash of a character.
She's totally on board with sacrificing another person to save herself.
She was going to kidnap a child.
She was going to kidnap the child.
But check this out.
She's also not a good actor doing any of that stuff. That's why. She's really stiff.
She was really stiff.
I understand she may have been pulled in a bunch of different directions, no pun intended, I guess, with her weird power. But she was not a good actress. But other than her, I thought for the most part, I thought this movie was not poorly acted. And
Walton Goggins' accent was out of control. He just leaned way too much in his own accent.
He reminded me of what's his name from The Fifth Element.
Gary Oldman.
Chris Tucker's part?
No, Gary Oldman.
Dumbass Chris Tucker. Fucking.
The one with the bad hair. Oh, wait, the other one.
Yes.
Okay, the third one with the bad hair.
Oh, Gary Oldman's character?
Yes.
Good Zog. Lord. Zog.
Yeah.
Your time for revenge is at hand. Voila.
Yeah. Where'd you get Chris Tucker's?
because he was
coming, my man. Come in, my man.
Well, dude, he was chewing up the scenery every time he popped up. I mean, he was like overacting. Just he was so animated when he would talk.
Yeah. So
his eyes would like flare up. His nose would flare. I was like, what is wrong with him? Like, he seems so animated. It's like, it's almost like, hey, play this character really funny, but you're supposed to be really dangerous. It seemed really weird to me every time he came on.
Yeah. So she and him were at opposite ends of the shit acting spectrum. where it the far left is horrible and the far right is horrible. Everybody else was there in the middle doing a good job.
I love Michael Douglas is Pym though. I really do like that too.
And he and Scott and you could tell that he was legit pissed at Scott for all the dumb shit he'd been doing.
Yeah.
And Hope sort of in between where she kind of likes him, but is always trying to get like I get dude that works. That's why I'm like I can't believe they fucked this movie up so bad.
Yeah.
Because it all worked.
They should have been able to put it together real easy.
Well, the stuff that works, they stole from the first movie, though. Everything they tried to create for this movie, they fucked up.
I'm telling you, people who wrote this literally watched the first one and said, hey, we're going to do this, but this time instead of the ants being tiny, we're going to make them giant, because that makes sense. And then the ant's going to play a fucking drum kit, because that makes sense.
Or how about the first time they thought he snuck out, they wouldn't just put a fucking camera on the house? Like, are you kidding me, dude? I got a goddamn camera on my doorbell for $150, and the FBI can't put a fucking camera on the guy's house to see an ant is walking around? Like, give me a break, dude. Like, I'll forgive that a little bit, but
you know what? I didn't think about that. That made it worse.
There was so much in this movie where I'm just like, come on, man. Like, dude, who do you think I am? Like, they had a lot of contempt for their fucking viewers in this movie that thought we would buy all that stupid bullshit science garbage and that we would just be cool with them telling us Janet has celestial powers. You know, just so much stuff in this movie that you're like, why are you trying to feed me all this bullshit? I'll take a little bit of bullshit because it's a sci-fi movie, fantasy, superhero movie. But like when the whole movie is shovels of bullshit to get you to your next scene and to justify where the characters are going next, I'm done. And then in the meantime, you're not even being creative with the shrinking, growing stuff. Like, or everything you were creative with, you showed me in the trailers with the fucking Pez dispenser. Mm-hmm. Like,
or the running across the what knife blade. Yeah.
Running across the knife, which was cool, but that was the only time they did that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know. This movie just really, because I thought it was going to be so easily just enjoyable and it wasn't even kind of enjoyable. It made me, with it not being a terrible movie, it pissed me off.
Well, it's definitely a terrible movie. It's just not anger reducing terrible.
Because I'm always the Marvel defender of these movies, and I can't defend this movie at all.
Well, here's the thing that gets me too is looking at the tomatometer, it's currently at 86% with an audience score of 80%. Paquita, when we were sitting waiting for the credits to finish up so we could watch the stingers, she went ahead and checked where it was on the scale of the various Marvel movies on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's like basically in the middle, right? But I think most people are going to walk away from this going, this is one of the worst of the Marvel movies, and I think that it's had one of the largest drops of any Marvel movie from weekend to weekend. And I for years you've been hearing the DC guys complain, the Marvel bias, there's all this Marvel bias, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, bullshit. The bias is the Marvel movies are actually pretty fucking good, and that's why people like it. But the Marvel bias is in full effect in terms of critical response to Ant-Man and the Wasp, because I'm sick to fucking death of looking at reviews for this movie talking about what a great anecdote it was after Infinity War. And Infinity War was so dark, and we needed a nice uplifting movie, and this was so much fun, and it helped to raise your spirits again. It's like, so you're judging this movie based on how it made you feel relative to Infinity War, but you're not judging the movie on its own lack of merits. And so I think there's going to be one of these movies where, like, some of the Marvel movies you go back and you reevaluate, and they should be higher, because literally, the tomatometer on First Avenger is lower than this movie. You know, fix it angry. And I talked to tons of Marvel guy or comic book fans who the two Cap movies, those are their favorites. So many of the guys that are DC guys, their favorite is the First Avenger, and yet it ranks so low on these tomatometers. But I think that Marvel bias is really making the critics give this movie more of a pass than it deserves. But what also gets me as far as the DC aspect, this movie is a DC movie. There's all this hand-wavy bullshit. There's that contempt for the audience. There's a lack of real continuity in terms of, you know, how shit's supposed to work and how hard things should be, because they're doing the same thing they're doing with all the Marvel movies where they're constantly the master on and off magic CGI bullshit. The physics in this movie don't make any sense. Me and Paquita were just sitting there going, they're shrinking and they're growing and this is happening and none of this fucking makes sense. And how is it that she's out of phase with reality and yet she goes and lays down on a cot? It's like, but you're phasing through reality, but you've got a cot that you can just lay down on like you're like it's nothing. So
it's a quantum cot,
yeah. So this feels very much like an 80s movie. This has the rules of like a late 80s, early 90s superhero movie where they just don't respect the audience and they don't respect the science. They figure it's a superhero movie, so we can just fucking play fast and loose with it. But one of the things that attracts people to the Marvel movies is they've got reasonable science. The whole thing about Marvel when it first came out in the 60s was compared to DC, that was more realistic. Yeah, everybody suddenly got powers from radiation and shit instead of cancer, but compared to being rocketed from the doomed planet Krypton, it was realistic. fantastic. But this movie goes back to that fantasy. It's basically a fantasy. There's nothing particularly scientific about any of this shit. And it feels so much like a sequel to an action comedy from the 80s, where you just take what was in the first movie and you try to make it bigger. You try more pit characters and more set pieces and more and more and more. And it's just super fucking empty and super mindless. And characters are there and they give them a reason to be there. They concoct the shit, but it's completely inorganic. You don't buy it. There's so many 80s and 90s action comedies that feel just like this movie. It's super fucking dated in terms of its vibe, and it's a major turnoff because of it.
I can't defend this movie. I totally
agree with what you said with the reviews, because I did see that with a lot of the reviews were like, oh, it was like a palate cleanser after Infinity War. It was so great to just have this happy family, and I'm just like, what? What does that have to do with the merits of this film? This film, what the fuck are you talking about? You were still moping around after Infinity War a month later? The fuck does that even mean? You know what I mean? Like, this shit doesn't even make any sense.
But the whole thing is like, they take the loose threads from the first movie and they're trying to make a whole sweater out of these loose threads. You know, they left Janet Van Dyne in the quantum field. So we're going to do a whole movie about going into the quantum field, but they don't. It just feels like such bullshit. It's just, there's not enough to make anything out of what they drew from the first movie. It just feels like a sequel that never, it's not its own thing. It's just a continuation of a bunch of other things.
So I guess
it's like a mid-season episode of a TV show. This is not a movie.
We can kind of start to wrap this up, and I want to wrap it up by saying, or unless you guys have anything else that you really want to get off your chest, because there's one thing that I absolutely just am cautioning everyone on Earth. Hopefully somebody at Marvel is listening to this, but if you guys want to go, you can. If not, I will get on my soapbox.
Go for it.
Okay, here's my soapbox. If this movie has fucking anything to do with the next Avengers movie, I'm going to lose my shit.
Oh, it does.
And I'm afraid that it fucking does. If I hear one more stupid shit about it's there is no time in the quantum realm, which might be how he can jump to... Fuck you, dude. If they somehow get the Avengers reunited I should be more specific. If it's like Janet Van Dyne is some key to unlocking how they beat Thanos or some shit, dude, I'm gonna fucking lose it. Like, no. And luckily she fucking turned to ash.
They all turned to ash, yes.
Good, good. Because if she's got fucking celestial powers and she's one of the reasons, if he's just stuck in the quantum realm, okay, I'll give that a little bit. But if sort of fucking fulcrum that turns the tide on Thanos, and it's not Tony Stark or one of the original Avengers or somebody who's not a fucking who didn't come out of some shit dick afterthought movie, I'm going to be absolutely fucking furious, just so you know.
I was looking forward. I really thought that Ant-Man and the Wasp were going to be part of the Avengers group as a way of sort of kind of giving them a little payback since they were the founding Avengers and they didn't get to be in the earliest Avengers movies. But I think it's pretty clear from the stinger that they've set up a circumstance where none of the characters from this movie are going to appear in the next Avengers movie. It's going to be all about the original cinematic Avengers. They don't want to deal with Hank Pym or any of that kind of bullshit. So they fucking wiped him out of existence and stuck Scott Lang in the quantum field. We're not going to see any of those characters in the next Avengers movie. I'm pretty confident that's going to be a much smaller movie and much more focused on the characters, because I think it's, you know, I don't want it to be the case, and I certainly see outs for it, but I feel like the next Avengers movie is going to be the original Avengers Logan, where they all know this is going to be the last ride of Chris Evans as Captain America and so on and so forth. And so it's just going to focus on those original Avengers and basically do an anti-Age of Ultron, anti-Iron Man 2, shrink everything down until it's just about the characters that you care about the most.
Dude, I hope so, but I'm really worried with that motherfucker trapped in that quantum realm. And people are picking up little hints here and there when they were traveling
Dude, they gave you a hint. They told you. She said, watch out for there's some kind of time field because you could be lost. And I was like, oh, shit. They just told us how they're going to do it.
That's
and
one of the ones where people are.
Yeah. As soon as I heard that, I was just like, oh, this movie. This movie was nothing more than to bridge the first one, Infinity War, and the next one. That's it.
Because I wanted to be where Doctor Strange was saying, you know, he sacrificed himself so Tony could live, right? Because Tony is going to be one of the main... If it turns because fucking Ant-Man's jumping through time because he shrank real small, dude, it's going to be real hard for me to look past that in this next movie.
Well, jumping through time is an Atom thing, too. And I've got enough problems with him stealing Atom shit for these Ant-Man movies. But going through time is something very specific to the Atom, Ray Palmer. So that would be really fucking lame, because I don't remember Ant-Man ever doing that shit.
No,
I don't think he did any of this. He never went into fucking quantum realms. Are you kidding me? Give me a break. Or if he did, I apologize.
But since you're bringing up the stinger, though, oh, man, I hated that stinger so much, because this is the this fucking boring ass pussy Disneyfied, because that's one of the things I hate about the Ant-Man movies, both of them, but especially this one, is that you remember when, especially in the 90s after Batman got big, companies like Disney kept trying to come up with their own superheroes to, you know, tap that market, and they're always like fucking lame, like Meteor Man type shit. This movie feels like one of those bullshit kiddie versions of a superhero movie, and then at the fucking very end of the movie, you kill the entire fucking cast? Holy shit! And then you're waiting for that stinger, and what's the stinger? Yeah, you get to see the ant playing the drums again, which they fucked up because they'd already shown that in the black and white footage, so it's not even a good gag. They should have saved that for the very end so that you'd never seen it before, instead of it being something you've seen already repeatedly. But also, yeah, they're doing that in the context of this apocalyptic event where the emergency broadcast signal is going off and the doors open. And why is Scott's door open? Because Cassie probably turned to fucking ash too, and you're like, oh my god, this is a fucking zombie apocalypse fucking ending, and then you're supposed to be all cute with the answer shit. It's like, this was a pussy ass family movie and you're gonna end it with this fucking massacre? That was completely inappropriate, and all it was doing was feeding into the Marvel machine rather than the feel that this movie had established and both of the movies had established. Way too fucking dark. So I was really offended by that atonal moment. But also what bugs me is that so much of this movie is about reuniting Hank with Janet. And one of the things I really loved about the first movie, it was that they alluded to Hank Pym being fucking damaged. This is a fucked up dude who's fucking damaged. And so when they have him reunite with Janet and she's got her magical fucking powers. Yep.
To piggyback off what you said, he's got that line in the first movie that I love where they're like, well, why didn't you just put the suit back on? And he was like, it was taking its toll on me. And I was like, yes, dude, that's the kind of shit that Marvel Cinematic Universe movies do, where they put that hint in that, you know, that's the tide of the comic books, that the suit and the shrinking and the growing and the shrinking and the growing fucked his brain up, and he had to just quit cold turkey. He had to stop. Even though his wife was lost and could possibly still be found, he had to quit because of it. And dude, so I loved that line in the first one. Anyway, go ahead.
And then they shit upon it by having him go into the quantum field in this movie. But also, I think one of the reasons why so many people hate Iron Man 2 so much is because they do try to sort of address the alcoholism that comes from the comics. And a lot of people, I think, just have a really strong negative reaction to that. They did not want to see that, especially the more casual fans that don't know that's a part of the character from the comics. And so knowing Hank's history of spousal abuse, of multiple personality disorder and nervous breakdowns and suicidal ideation and all this shit, to have him get back with mommy, and now mommy and daddy are together again, it's gonna be such a happy time. It's just like, this is gross, you know. Even if he's saving Janet, I don't want to see them trying to be mommy daddy to the Marvel universe, because these two have a fucked up relationship in the comics, and they sort of kind of have a fucked up relationship in the movie that's alluded to, and I don't think they're ever going to fucking pay that off. So it's just skeeving me out that they're even playing them up as being this perfect couple that's finally reunited after all these years. But also, I love Michelle Pfeiffer. She was fucking awful in this movie. Her performance was just something about her voice, her mannerisms. She was just bad. And watching her against these other actors that were doing a better job and that we've gotten more familiar with, I just wanted him to go the fuck away. She looks weird. None of her deal makes sense with her fucking weird alien shit and her cloak, like she's coming out of a fucking Star Wars movie and shit. It's like, oh man, I'm not on board with this chick showing up again. And I was totally digging seeing Wasp back in the 70s in the opening part of the movie, but once they've got Michelle Pfeiffer doing the dumb shit that she does in this movie and Paul Rudd doing the dumb shit he does pretending to be Janet Van Dyne, I'm totally turned off this character within the cinematic universe now.
They should have left her gone. Like, I don't get it. They should have left her gone.
This movie's full of bad mistakes for people who didn't know better than to just leave that shit alone.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, about the stinger, you know, I didn't really care that they Thanos'd him at the end. I didn't really think that was that big of a deal. Like, oh shit, he's trapped in the quantum realm. What I thought was dumber is that they're fucking mining the quantum energy.
Yeah, because they just established it. Yeah.
And they're just sending him in there, and they're just banking off millions and millions of dollars off this quantum energy they're just bringing out of the quantum realm. I'm like, really? That's where we got to at the end of this movie? They're going to use the machine they rescued Janet with, and she's just standing there with all of them like, yep, let's go get some quantum energy. Let's go back into the quantum realm where I was lost for 40 fucking years. Just haphazardly send her people down in there to mine quantum energy. That I thought was way more off-putting. Like, you figured if anybody would be like, don't ever go in, don't open the fucking quantum realm, you figured it'd be her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's fucking mine it. We're going to make you fucking rich. It's so much quantum money.
Well, and they don't send him in the fucking ship like Hank. It's like, we're going to tie a rope to your ankle, dive.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Yeah.
Dude, it was so fucking weird. This movie was just, this movie was a mess.
Scott Lang is still clearly expendable to this entire family, so that's pretty gross too.
Yeah, but they obviously don't give a shit about him, right? Like, fuck? Yeah, let's send Scott. He'll go. He's desperate. He's got child support payments he has to make to him.
Why did y'all have to do that?
His daughter's got a replacement father anyway. She's doing fine. What other child has the luxury of multiple fathers? You know? Want to do the mail real quick?
I don't know if it's a real quick thing, but sure, please dive into that.
All right, we got Facebook likes from Keith G. Baker, Gord Tolton, DeBache, Allie Batts, and Derek William Crabb.
Google Plus likes from the Google Hammer Plus Strikes likes. On the episode Universal Pictures Hulk 15th Anniversary Edition.
WordPress blog follows Law Information. Jeffrey Brown, a.k.a. Tsungo Plus Inc. And Liverpool Monkey 76. WordPress blog like.
Bell Mickey, I think. Yeah.
Bell Mickey.
Permanent Marvel Maximus followers include Alan Wojciechowski, Almira's, Batnik, Big Doggy, Bill Scudders, Captain October, Crazy Town Podcast, Dave's Travel Corner, The Difference Between Us, Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop, Man Brain Podcast, Mark Blair, Mega Sheen, Norin Rad, Not Top 10, Occam's Eraser, love that, Red Time for Bonzo, which is a Marxist Reaganist movie podcast. Don't ask me how the fuck that works. Regine Hunter's Wigs, a shout out to Living Single, Rick Rouge, SS Sampathmakur, something like that, Terry Mayo, who is the writer of Wicked Righteous, one of the comics we covered on another podcast, and Words and Pictures.
We got Follow Fridays from CJ Fox, Digest Cast, Into the Weird, and Talk Nerdy to Me, Retweet Frantic Ones, Ange Martin Gray, Randomitable Siskoid, and Talk Nerdy to Me, Keepers of the Favorite Flame, Adam Black Moon, Anime Freaks, Anthony Joseph, Backseat Directors, Biko Django, Bob Buster, Bronze Ed Babies, Canoes, Chris at Bat Books for Beginners, Chronosphere Fiction, Coffee and Comics, Comic-Con Junkies, Comics of the Golden Age, Crunch Crunch, Dallin Bumgarten,
who is a former guitarist for the band Berlin, which I thought Mr. Fixit would appreciate.
No, oh, cool. Shit. Daniel French, Delvin, Darkweb / Felix Leiter. Leiter?
Leiter from James Bond.
Leiter. Doc Strange, DSRA Podcast, Dwight L. McPherson, Ava Zarnak Art, Fanholes Podcast, Felipe Alves D.O., Flying Jew, Gabriel Blake, Green Lantern HG, The Hammer Strikes, History of Comics, The Hoopers, Ice and the Face, IG88, Jasper's Outfits, Jeff Werder, Jennifer DeRoss, Jerry Whitworth, Jim Escavale, Joe Torres, John Horsley, Johnny E. Awesome, Kaiser Leo, John D. Noel, Longbox Crusade, Lost in Time, Martin Kaiser, Max Romero, The Nerd Rage Podcast, Nerdfect Strangers, Nexus of All, Nicole, Ocom's Eraser, Paul Matthew Carr, Peyton, Bracket, Ready for SDC, CC Bracket, Press Grove, Randy Andrews, Richard G, Rosalie, Helena, Sean Merrick, Slangword Resist, Smash Ultimate Countdown, Steve Sellers, Varagian Vigilante, Words and Pictures, Yo Arte, Xena Schultz.
So I was asking folks of you down, you down with Marvel SHP, and Leary Exchange was like, yeah. Down with OPP, yeah, you know me. And then Mark Gray was like, I didn't understand that gag, # Thick Brit, which if he knew what OPP was, he probably wouldn't use the # Thick Brit. Other people's property, other people's pussy, other people's penis. Martin Gray was like, oh, young people stuff. And I'll just remind you, OBP came out in 1991, nearly 30 years ago.
Wow. All right, we have some comments here. This is quite enough sayers. Is that what you're saying?
Indeed.
All right, our first comment comes from CJ. Been spot listening to Marvel SHP podcast to get caught up. Just finished season one Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. review. Really enjoyed it. Look forward to the rest of your season reviews.
Yeah, we've already recorded season two. I just haven't gotten around to getting it edited and released yet. And we'll work our way through the other ones.
Our next comment comes from Canoes. I'm going to listen to this now whilst I am working. I can't wait to hear your views on this movie. I was one of two minds whether to rewatch this movie or give it another chance. After listening to you guys, I think I'll give it a miss and banish the memories of this movie to a dark place and throw away the key. Was this the Universal Hulk?
I can't remember which Hulk it was. It probably doesn't matter based on people's reaction to both of the Hulk movies.
Banish them both. They're both shitstorms.
I think this was the first Hulk. No, it's Incredible Hulk. I think it's Incredible Hulk. Yeah. Speaking of which, Randy Caldwell was saying, I am not watching The Incredible Hulk yet. I had better hurry. I am now watching The Incredible Hulk. It has only taken me 2 years to reach this point. I hope to be whelmed. I would totally drink a Banner Blood energy drink. Between Hulk monster drinks and classic Thor tank tops, Marvel is missing out on merchandising. I mean, really, why do Age of Ultron, Dr. Pepper? Hulk Mountain Dew is the way to go. Actually, that should be a Green Lantern thing. Do we ever find out about the dog in Brazil? What the hell? Norton 360? No wonder he's always so angry. Anyway, I watched The Incredible Hulk, and I'm not particularly whelmed. It was okay. I can ignore the mass CGI. It was a decade ago. No problem there. I just didn't enjoy it because I'm me. Also, it was a young, fairly weak Hulk.
It's not just you, buddy.
I liked it.
Our next?
Certainly better than Ant-Man and the Wasp.
You know what? I would still say it's not better than Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay. Difference of opinion there. What about you, Fix-It? Is this better or worse than Incredible Hulk?
Oh, damn.
I'm not saying it's not close. I'm just saying it's
I'm going to say they're really close. They're like right neck and neck.
Well, it's like what you and Paquita was saying, where you were arguing Iron Man 3. To me, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 3, this movie, there, it's the fucking basement. You want to put them in whatever order you want to put them, you can put them in whatever order you want to put them. But you're still in the basement.
Well, and once again, you know, Fix-It's the Hulk fan. Paquita's an Iron Man fan. So she tends to rate Iron Man 3 lower than Ant-Man and the Wasp. I think because of investment. Same, I think, goes for Joe Fix-It. I personally feel this one was worse, though. Obviously, I like The Incredible Hulk, so I would feel that way, of course.
Our next comment comes from Martin Gray on Universal Pictures Hulk 15th Anniversary Edition. Gosh, has it been that long? Where's my Hulk puppy?
Randy Caldwell returns, this time covering the Universal Hulk. I don't see this on Netflix or Amazon Prime. I'm not spending $15 on iTunes either. I don't know if I want to rent it for $4 either. I'll check the nice Amazon ladies. The Hulk is $10 on Amazon, but I'll see if I can find it at an honest-to-granny-goodness record store. And we have not yet heard back from Randy, so I'm guessing not.
Which is kind of what I did, right? Half price books in a lot of ways is like
I went to another half off price bookstore and they had it for $2, so I picked it up.
Really, for $2? That's not bad. Was it the double disc like the one I got?
No, it wasn't. It was a single disc. But
I gave that. To you, Frank.
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay,
because I like that movie as well. Not nearly as much, but I still like it.
I did it to spite you, actually. So whatever.
No, I'm happy. It's going to my collection.
It backfired on you.
No, I know, dude. I'm just joking. Okay. Next comment comes from Dr. Ange at Rolled Spine on TV. Screenshots.
He threw up some shots of Hulk. He's caught it on cable, I assume.
Big fan of Connelly and all her work. Action sequences are cool. Hold up. Get tired of panels. Nolte and Bana suck the air out of the room.
And I was talking over you. He liked Sam Elliott as well.
Yeah.
You get Jeffrey Brown.
Jeffrey Brown. I will admit, I really just watched this movie for Nick Nolte's moments as David Banner. In my head canon, I like to think he's Ruffalo / Bruce's Hulk's dad, but I love all of his scenes and the final father-son moment. I kind of like the scene with how weird it was. I felt like something from another movie not directed by Ang Lee. It looks like improv. I like the Elfman score here, and when he bites the electrical cable, I laugh out loud. I heard Max say it was from a bad two-man play inserted into the film. And the scene is where I go, like, hot damn, that escalated quickly. If you like it for comedic purposes, sure. Unfortunately, that's 2+ hours into the movie. I like how he says, go, just watch me go. Nick Nolte should have gotten an Oscar for this. I want to see David Banner shouting at Thanos and Loki as they go.
Me too.
We will not attack Earth if you keep this guy and Hulk's dogs away from us. I kind of wish Nick Nolte and David Banner would have showed up somewhere in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as Hulk dogs biting into electrical cables. I kind of miss Nolte's Banner. Probably would have been scared. He probably would have scared Jeff Goldblum's Grandmaster in Thor Ragnarok. My first time seeing this movie back in 2003, I was excited because it was my favorite character from the 70s. Bixby's Hulk show, watching it on Sci-Fi Channel and reruns, along with Wonder Woman 77 and The Flash. I also, as a kid, had one random issue from Peter David's Hulk run from the 90s, Cash Flag.
He said, which random issue was it? And he revealed what it was.
Oh, okay.
It was issue 389 with the man thing.
Gotcha. And the scene where David gets his powers freaked me out because it kind of reminded me of UPN's 90s Incredible Hulk cartoon. Replying to Sujo. But this cartoon and Ang Lee's movie are kind of stuck in my head as what the Hulk was. Bixby's Incredible Hulk plus Peter David Hulk. Before Avengers and Marvel's MCU, I kind of like how the first movie kind of left the door open.
And then finally,
Gregory Lichfield said.
Oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't just what he said. Gregory Lichfield left us a gif from The Incredible Hulk where he's doing the clap saying, no one like Hulk movie? Hulk smash! And finally,
the Mary Marking Society. You want me to do this one?
Yeah, go for it.
The 20th Century Geek, The 100th Age, Adam Lanberry, Angela Velasquez, Amy Stewart Hale, Attilan Rising, Batnick, # Twibben, Bill Scoopneck, Dr. G Nerdologist, Bone Dragon Comics, Brody's Kitchen, Bum White Bobcat, CJ Fox, Caroline Wells, Cash Flag, Collected Edition, Daniel Blake, Dirk Ashton, Ed Moore, Isha 714, Fair City Podcast, Gloria Pardo, Goldmine Productions, Gregory Lichtfield, Tom, Jake and Tom Conker, Jeffrey Brown, Joe Crawford, Just in Time with the JNT Baggers, Justice First Dawn, Keith G. Baker, The List Game, Long Box of Darkness, Matt Stacey, Nerd Chatting. That's Nerd Chatting. Is it Nerds Chatting?
I think so, yeah.
It's nerds. Let me read that again. I'm sorry. That's nerds, plural of nerd. Nerds chatting. Not.
Oh, and we miss Jason Handelman, too, so throw that in there while we're breaking.
Okay. Not nerd chatting. Oh, my God.
We should throw an R
Rad
in there.
Adventures. Rad Adventures, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Ryan DeLay, Secret Wars and Podcast Balan, Son of Thulu, Stu Perrins, Tim Pierce, the Notcaster.
Tim Price, I think.
Tim Price, the... my eyes have kind of teared because of the nerd chatting. Tony Scipione, Twist Style Productions, Wakanda Wonderkid, Wonderkind?
Yeah.
Zach Sally.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
No one like Hulk movie.
I like Hulk movie.
Oh, I know you do. You damaged son of a bitch. You know, when I was listening to the first episode of Bonding Agents, I kind of expected for old dude at some point to bite into an electrical cable. And, it was some part between when you guys were talking about the best way to execute a man or
with a 22 caliber specifically now.
Right. Or what the best type of prophylactic was to put on your rifle so that water wouldn't get into the barrel in Vietnam.
Was that before or after you heard the audio of us assembling and disassembling a rifle?
I know it was definitely after you played the entire fucking national anthem. I get the reminiscing where you're like, yeah, I remember, because it would be the pastor would give his sermon and then it would say, now the national, or this is KSBJ signing off, now the national anthem, and it would play the national anthem. And then you actually found the clips of the sermon, given his little sermon, and it goes, and now the national anthem. I'm like, okay, well, it's definitely going to fade out here. And then you played the entire national fucking anthem into the static bars, the color bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is a fucking shit show. But I'm definitely going to pause this and pick this up later at work. But man, what if that was an interesting.
Mr. Fixit and I were having a conversation about that show over the weekend, and Fixit fucking loved it because it was as insane and fucking indulgent as it was.
It was like having non-flashbacks, and I was like, I remember hearing that.
Oh, dude, somebody replied, and I don't want to give away one of your own comments from your show because I'm sure you want to read it with old dude or whatever. But they said it really gives me another piece of the puzzle, and I'm like, that's exactly what the fuck it is. If you're trying to figure out who the fuck Diablo Frank is and how he got to this fucking just tragedy of a life he's in, this is another piece of the puzzle. He's sitting around with his father assembling sniper rifles, and it's supposed to do with James Bond. Like, and that's what I thought. I was like, are you guys trying to, like, this is a weapon they used in a Bond movie?
Yeah, so actually
he's going right, but you didn't fucking say it in the podcast, which is the problem.
Well, because it was an excerpt from our overlong conversation about From Rush for Loves, like, where am I going to put in the part where we're just talking about what this rifle does for 20 fucking minutes? Like, here's the zero episode. So
here's what I would suggest. You just break in your voice saying, at this point, one of our favorite scenes was from Russia with Love, where so-and-so kills his dude with a sniper rifle. My father, old dude, owns this rifle. And here we go through and we talk about the weapon and its real world use. Instead, it's just, I hear some fucking clanking and some, like, stuff being screwed together. And then I realize you guys are fucking... a weapon in this guy's house.
Straightforward and linear would have again been like the ending of Ant-Man and the Wasp, right? Where it's like out of nowhere, right? It's like, what this is, I'm having a malaria fever dream, why is his voice just suddenly coming in and ruining it for me? So no, you gotta figure this shit out for yourself. You know, you gotta put on your big boy pants when you're listening to that show, and then what's
on our Facebook page, our big boy fucking therapist pants. Get your big boy therapist couch out for Bonding Agent. But no, I said on our Facebook page it was like a stream of consciousness fever dream, so I'm glad you said fever dream too, because that's exactly what it is. The whole national anthem. Fucking like 3 minutes into the podcast, you played the whole fucking national anthem. I'm like, this shit is insane.
Well, but anyway, again, the entire show is insane. So the entire show will be us talking for like 10 minutes about a sci-fi movie, and then, you know, let's talk about the prostitutes picking up dollar bills with their vaginas in the Philippines. Yeah.
So no, here's the tagline. It should be Bonding Agents, a father and son bonding while we unbond our listeners. Because they're going to fucking peel off like a fucking, like, dude. Oh, my God. Can you imagine if you just listen to, like, our fucking, like, our, I don't know, review, our Guardians of the Galaxy review, and then you tuned into Bonding Agents? Holy Christ.
My own father dressed like they did in I Spy. He had a skinny belt and a skinny tie.
In 2018.
Oh, we believe the secret agents had all that stuff, man. And some of that stuff did exist. The scopes on the guns and Man from U.N.C.L.E. They were supposed to be infrared scopes, and they were.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
My son comes over with his microphone and his digital board and computer, and he wants to bond over things, and since we both watch films, that's what we bond over. Started out to be over James Bond, but he heard somebody else was doing that. So, we're bonding over any kind of spy.
Secret agent, man. Wild Wild West.
The Avengers was on American TV, but it didn't go over. It's not really something I think most Americans could understand. British invasion may have begun, but America had to catch up to the humor of it.
Bonding agents. The father and son Spy-Fi podcast.
Spy-Fi?
Your asset.
Old dude.
Yeah, Lou Frank.
And the program's about whatever he tells me it is. Spies and science fiction all rolled up into one.
Available through Shout Engine and the Internet Archive, through iTunes and Shibboleth Podcatcher.
The most provocative part of our man Flint is the fact that he lives with like five women. That is what would bend people. Anybody watching the movie at that time would be going, oh, whoa.
Bonding Agents is a Rogue Spine podcast.